All right, I thought it'd be good to study tonight concerning God's work with Joseph, and maybe the extended title here is God's work with Joseph and Israel and Egypt, and how he is really working many, many things at the same time. But it's interesting for us to consider how God did work with Joseph and the many things that he was doing in the process. But we'll start in Acts chapter 7 here. Stephen is preaching to the Jews concerning the history of Israel and reviewing that. And he's leading up to the fact that all of God's prophets have spoken of Christ, of the Messiah that's coming. But he's starting out describing God's full plan here. And this plan includes the promise that God made to Abraham. And of course, we understand how God told Abraham that through his seed all the nations of the earth would be blessed, and he was referring to Christ when he was speaking of the seed of Abraham. But here Stephen is starting through this history to help them to understand how all of this is God's work in ultimately bringing Christ. And so he begins in verse 2. Again, this is Stephen, and it says, "And he said, Men, brethren, and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Charan, and said unto him, Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and come into the land which I shall show thee. Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Charan, and from thence, when his father was dead, he removed him into this land, wherein you now dwell. And he gave him none inheritance in it, no, not so much as to set his foot on. Yet he promised that he would give it to him for possession, and to his seed after him, when as yet he had no child." So here is God speaking to Abraham. Abraham has, as it says here, no child yet, but yet God is making this promise that he is going to do all of these things through Abraham. He continues in verse 6, "God spake on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, that they should bring them into bondage, and entreat them evil 400 years. And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, said God, and after that shall they come forth and serve me in this place. And he gave him the covenant of circumcision. And so Abraham begat Isaac and circumcised him the eighth day. And Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat the 12 patriarchs. And the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt. But God was with him and delivered him out of all his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and made him governor over Egypt and all his house." So here we have Stephen laying out this plan that the Lord is working, and this the span of this plan is some 2,000 years, as he's speaking from Abraham here till the time of Christ. But he had this plan, ultimately, again, that's going to include Christ. In verse 5, we saw where he promises the land of Canaan to Abraham's children. In verse 6, he says that Abraham's children are going to be brought into bondage and serve those who are over them for 400 years. And they will be, as he said there, entreated evil for 400 years. So it's going to be 400 years, a very difficult time for the children of Israel. And all of this is before any of this comes about. In verse 7, though, God says there's going to come a point after that 400 years where he is going to judge the nation that it has taken them, and that they are going to be made free. And so he goes on there then to describe how God is using Joseph in those following verses. But we might just quickly review Genesis chapter 15 in verses 13 and 14, where the Lord is speaking to Abraham concerning this promise. In verse 13, it says, "He said unto Abram, Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance." And of course, if you put yourself maybe there as Abram listening to this promise that's being given, we might have scratched our heads a little bit, saying, "Well, how is this all going to work? He's telling me here that my seed, and of course, again, Abraham didn't have children at that point, but he's saying he's going to have children. They're going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs. They're going to serve them for 400 years, and then somehow they're going to come out with this great substance." So if you think about it, somebody might really wonder, well, how could that possibly come about that you're going to be slaves, servants to these people, but then all of a sudden you're going to come out with great substance? But again, we understand, well, this is all part of the plan that God is working here. And there are many, many parts to this plan, and many levels, really, if we think about it. We're going to see, Lord willing, where the Lord is in carrying out this plan. He's also working with Joseph form Joseph. And so, of course, we're looking at all this to understand that, well, the Lord is working with all of us, and the Lord has a plan today, just like he had a plan back in this time. And he's not necessarily telling us all the details of what's going to be coming in the next few years or 100 years or however many years are left. But the Lord is working a plan, and he's working with individuals to carry out that plan. He's working with nations as part of carrying out that plan. And we need to, as we go through hopefully tonight, we should be thinking about, well, how did Joseph respond in all the different situations that he was placed in, and how did that enable him to be ultimately used by God as a part of this plan? And we need to recognize again that God is working with us individually, just like he was working with Joseph, just like he's worked with all of the ones that we read about in the scriptures. And of course, we'll see that Joseph was faithful in every situation that he was presented with. And the Lord mentions that, Joseph's faithfulness in Hebrews chapter 11. One of the specific things that he mentions there in Hebrews chapter 11, let's read verse 22. It says there, "By faith, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel and gave commandment concerning his bones." And so we see Joseph being brought up here with this great cloud of witnesses, as chapter 12 refers to these ones of faith here in chapter 11. But it mentions that Joseph gave commandment concerning his bones. And someone might say, well, what's the big deal about that? What's important about that? Well, of course, Joseph understood the promise that God had made to Abraham, that promise that we just read there a minute ago, and how the Lord was going to carry them into this land that was not theirs. They were going to serve these strangers, be evil and treated for 400 years. But then the Lord was going to release them from them. And so Joseph fully believed all of these things that the Lord had said there. And so Joseph understood, well, there's a lot more time left. 400 years hasn't happened here. I'm getting ready to die. And so Joseph was saying, well, when that time comes, at the end of that 400 years, and everybody is leaving to go into the land that the Lord has promised, I want you to get my bones and carry them and bury me there. And so Joseph fully believed what the Lord had promised, and he was talking about something that was yet to happen hundreds of years into the future. And he was saying, when this happens, do this. And so we see Joseph's great faith then in believing the promise that God had made to Abraham. And of course, that faith carries throughout all of Joseph's life. In Genesis chapter 37, we'll start looking now at what happened with Joseph. And of course, this is just, again, in this grand plan that the Lord has, this is just really a sliver of time that covers, you know, 20 or so years of Joseph's life that we'll look at tonight. But in chapter 37 here, we see Joseph is around, or he's 17 years old at this time. I think we have, you know, a couple of folks that are, or at least one, that's around that age. And, you know, think about when you were 17, think about, what if these things had happened to me when I was 17 years old? How would I have responded in this situation? Well, in verse 1 of chapter 37, it says, Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his brethren, because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. So here Joseph has particular favor with Israel. And of course, as we read through all of this, we realize, and we read, if you might recall, back in Acts chapter 7, where Stephen was laying out all of these things that the Lord is doing. There in verse 10 that we read earlier, Joseph specifically mentioned how the Lord gave Joseph favor with Pharaoh. Well, here we see that Joseph has particular favor with his father. And, you know, again, we realize the Lord is working here with Israel, he's working with Joseph, he's working with all of these individuals, and the Lord does move individuals to have favor or to not have favor over others. And so we understand that this is part of the Lord's work as well. And so Joseph does, he is the favored child in the family, and of course we probably all have seen situations like that. What's going to happen? Well, his siblings are very envious of that, and it's to the point where in verse 4 they hated him. So this root of bitterness that the Lord warns us about in the New Testament, when there's envy, it had gotten to that point with his brothers, and they are very bitter to the point where they hate Joseph, and they don't even speak peaceably to Joseph. Now, that doesn't stop Joseph. In verse 5, it says, Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. Well, why did they hate Joseph for this dream? Well, here's the dream in verse 6. He said unto them, Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said unto him, Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And so they already hated him because he was the favored child. And then now he has these dreams where the dreams are indicating that he is in some fashion going to be reigning over them. And of course, that makes them even madder. He has another dream. In verses 9 and 10, we see it says he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, Behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, What is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the same. So here we see this second dream that Joseph has. And again, we have to ask the obvious question here. Well, was this just a coincidence? Well, certainly it was not a coincidence. Well, what was causing Joseph to, or maybe we should say, who was causing Joseph to have these dreams? And of course, we understand this is all part of the plan that the Lord is setting in motion with Joseph at this time. And so in this particular dream, it's very obvious to the family that here is the sun and the moon. It says there, and the 11 stars all making obeisance to Joseph. And Israel fully understands this. And he says, shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? Well, yes, indeed they shall, because that's what the Lord's will was. Of course, we'll see that hopefully later as this plan continues to unfold. But we see that, again, this made his brethren even more envious. But we also notice there that his father realized, well, there's something to these dreams. He didn't understand what the significance of it was, but he observed it and realized there's something to this, and he remembered it. As we go down into chapter 37, we see in verse 18, he's out on his way to see his brothers. In verse 18, it says, when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. So, again, there's many examples that we can find in the scriptures where envy leads to murder. And here is another one of those cases where they're to that point where they're ready to murder their own brother because of their envy. And so in verse 19, it says, they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what shall become of his dreams. And so their plan here is that they're going to kill their brother, throw him into a pit, and they're going to go home and lie and say that some evil beast had devoured Joseph. And not all the brothers were on board with this plan. We see that Reuben, in verse 21, it says, Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him. Why did he say to do that? Well, what was Reuben thinking here? Well, in verse 22, it says that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. So we see Reuben here didn't want to see this happen to Joseph. He wasn't to that point that most of his brothers were to, and so he was thinking, well, let's just throw him in this pit, and then his idea was he would come back later and bring him back home. Well, of course, as we think about, well, what is God's full plan here? Well, we realize, well, this isn't really part of God's plan either. That's not the intent to get him back to his father Israel. And so we see that even though Reuben has a good intention here to save his brother, we see, well, that's actually not what the Lord is going to do here. The Lord is intending, he's using this as the way by which he is going to get Joseph down to this land that is ultimately going to enslave the Israelites for 400 years. And so this is all part of that plan. And so in verse 23, it says, it came to pass when Joseph was come unto his brethren that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was upon on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. So they take Joseph, they throw in the pit. The scriptures note here that there was nothing in the pit. There was not even water in the pit. So again, these brothers threw him in the pit thinking, well, he's just going to die in that pit. And think about, well, what if you're Joseph? What are you thinking? Well, you're thinking, my brothers just threw me into this empty pit with no water. they're throwing me to my death in this pit. So imagine if you're 17 years old and this is happening to you, what would be going through your mind at this point? Now his brothers go off, they begin to eat there in verse 25. And then we see in verse 25, they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. We might ask ourselves, well, wow, what a coincidence. These merchant men from Midian are getting ready to travel to Egypt, and they just happen to be coming along this time that the brothers threw Joseph into this pit. Well, you can believe that's a coincidence if you want, but that's not the way I understand that. And again, it's part of the Lord's plan to get Joseph down into Egypt, which is the next part of the plan. And so they ultimately sell Joseph to the Ishmaelites. We see in verse 29, Reuben apparently had not been part of that when they did that. And so he returns to the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. So he was very upset because Joseph was not in the pit as he was thinking as part of his plan. And again, we realize, well, even Reuben's plan wasn't what the Lord's plan was. And, if their plans don't match what the Lord is intending, they're not going to have success in what they were thinking. In verse 36, further on down, the merchantmen come down into Egypt. We see in verse 36, it says, the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's, and captain of the guard. So, again, put yourself into Joseph's place here. You've been in this pit, and now you're pulled out of the pit only to be sold to some merchantmen that are going to sell you now as a slave in a country that's far away. What would be going through our minds if that was us, again, at 17 years old? Well, you know, there's probably all kinds of reactions that we might have. We might have a temptation to just give up in despair. I mean, it just seems like it's hopeless. You're thrown into the pit. Now you're going to be sold as a slave. One might be tempted to be angry and seek vengeance here. There's some, who would, quote, get angry at God for these unfair things that are happening to them in their lives. But none of those were the reactions of Joseph, as we'll see here, as he behaves under Potiphar. But from the outside, looking at these things that are happening to Joseph, who would really understand that this is all part of God's plan, that promise that he had made to Abraham? Even at this point, we noted earlier how Israel noted the things that Joseph said about the dreams, but at this point, he wouldn't be able to make that connection at this point, right? And so, from the outside here, it would not be clear at all what the Lord is working. And, we need to recognize that as well, that as we're going by day to day, and the Lord is working with each of us, carrying out his plans, we might not realize something that seems like a very bad thing. I mean, here's Joseph being thrown into a pit to be left for dead, and then they decide to sell him as a slave. Well, these are pretty terrible things. Sometimes we have some terrible things happen to us, and we might wonder, well, why is this happening? What is the purpose of this? And, we need to recognize that God is in control. We do have that promise that he's given us in Romans chapter 8, that he's going to work all things together for good to those that love him and are called according to his purpose. And so, and that's exactly what's happening here with Joseph. these things from the outside look like pretty awful things, and it's pretty trying for Joseph on his faith. It certainly is a test on his faith, and these things are causing Joseph to grow spiritually. We study a lot about the reason that we suffer for righteousness. Well, it causes us to grow, right? Just like Jesus learned obedience through the things that he suffered. Well, here is Joseph that is learning obedience through these things that he is suffering. None of these things are happening to Joseph because of something that he's done wrong. These are all just part of God's plan that he's getting ready to carry out with Joseph, but it's also part of the forming that God is doing with Joseph. So again, we see how the Lord is working at multiple levels here, right? He has this big plan of what he's going to do with the children of Israel, and he's got to work all the pieces together to make that plan happen. But then there's, at the individual level, there's folks like Joseph here that he's causing to grow spiritually. And so here's Joseph suffering for not having done anything wrong. He's been faithful in all of the things he's been asked to do. We didn't read earlier, but one of the things that it noted there about Joseph was that he was bringing back reports to his father that his brothers weren't doing the things that they were supposed to be doing, right? And so that's what was part of their problem with Joseph, is that he was doing what was right, and they weren't. And he was coming back and being very faithful in what was being asked of him, and of course they weren't, and well, that's all part of that envy that they had against him. And so now we move into chapter 39. We see that he's been sold to Potiphar. Again, who is Potiphar? Well, we noted there that he was an officer of Pharaoh. So again, this isn't just a coincidence here that an officer of the ruler of Egypt just happened to buy Joseph as a slave here. This is all part of that plan that the Lord is bringing about. And you know, we might think about, well, what on that particular day, what made Potiphar, you know, get up and decide that he was going to go buy this particular slave? And we should recognize, well, the Lord is working with men's hearts. He's moving men's hearts to do the things that need to be done. And we need to recognize that we may not understand exactly how he does that, but we see the Lord working with ones like Potiphar here as well, right, to cause him to select Joseph as this slave that he's now going to own and put to work. In chapter 39, beginning in verse 1, it says, Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And then in verse 2, we see, and the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And so we see here that in verse 6, and he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And so we see here, again, the Lord is working these things between Joseph and Potiphar. And of course, there's a reason that the Lord selected Joseph here. Joseph was a faithful man. And Joseph, even in these very trying situations, here he is as a slave, being faithful to the one that to his owner here, And it was to the point where Potiphar, as it says there in verse 3, saw that the Lord was with Joseph. So he saw that the things that Joseph was doing, that he was prospering in those things, and it caused him to put him over all of his house, to oversee all of those things. As it says there in verse 4, Joseph found grace, he found favor in the sight of Potiphar. Why is that? Well, here was Joseph. Every time Potiphar said to do something, Joseph would go do it, and he would do it to the extent that it would prosper in Potiphar's house. And so Potiphar would see that, and of course he would be very favorable towards Joseph to the point where he, again, put everything in his house into Joseph's hand. He made him overseer over all those things. And we notice there in verse 5, when he did that, the Lord was working with that as well. And it says there at the end of verse 5, it says, the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he, that is Potiphar, had in the house and in the field. So here was the Lord that was blessing all of the stuff that Potiphar had, because he wanted to cause Joseph to have this favor, from Potiphar. And so he was blessing this work and blessing these things of Potiphar. So we see the Lord working in all of these day-to-day tasks that Joseph is doing for Potiphar, and causing him to gain this great favor. We know as time goes on, we know the account of how Potiphar's wife made the false accusation against Joseph. She was trying to cause him to commit adultery. And of course, that was yet another test for Joseph here, of course, at the individual level. But Joseph certainly passed that test as well. We note there, it ultimately came down, noted there in verse 10 that she continued to press day by day. It says she spake to Joseph day by day. But yet, he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or be with her. And so every day, here was this temptation that she was putting out for Joseph. And he was continuing to be faithful throughout all of this. And so finally there in verse 12, she tries to get him to one more time. And so it says he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. So Joseph literally fled out of the presence of Potiphar's wife here. But in the process, he left this garment. And so she makes this false accusation that he's tried to do these things that he certainly had never tried to do. And of course, that causes Potiphar to become very angry and to put him into prison. In verse 20, it says, Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. So again, we think about putting ourselves in the place of Joseph. And here you've been unjustly accused of something that you certainly did not do. You've been faithful in all of these things for your master, and now he's throwing you into prison because of this false accusation from his wife. Would anybody say that seemed fair? Certainly no one would say that. And so some who don't understand how the Lord is working these things and the purpose of suffering will say, well, that's just not fair, that what's happening to Joseph here. We hear that argument proposed today. We read about people who have made the choice to not believe in God because they think that some of these kinds of things that happen to people simply aren't fair. And what they're not understanding is that there is a good purpose in suffering. Of course, again, we're understanding we grow spiritually through suffering. And here's Joseph willing to be endure this temptation day by day, Now he's being thrown in prison when he had only done right. He had only been faithful. And again, the Lord is working with Joseph to cause him to grow spiritually in these things. Well, what happens then? And again, think about, well, what here you are, probably a little bit older than 17 now, but here now you've been thrown into this prison with all of these nice people. Well, no, that's not where you find nice people, is it? So here's Joseph with all of these people surrounded by these criminals. What would you do if that was you? You know, that would be a pretty trying situation, but yet we see Joseph continuing to prove his faithfulness there as he's in the prison. In chapter 39 now, verse 21, it says, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison." So, once again, the Lord is working with Joseph, and he's causing the keeper of the prison now to show favor toward Joseph. And verse 22, the keeper of the prison is very much like Potiphar, and he sees, well, here's a man who's faithful, and when I give him something to do, he does it, and whatever it is, it prospers. In verse 22, it says, "The keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it." So here was Joseph being put in charge of these other prisoners. And so imagine that being put over other prisoners. I'm sure they were very cooperative, were they not? Well, you know, generally speaking, when we go to see what's in or who's in prisons, we realize, well, they're generally not ones who follow the rules, right? That's why they're there. And here's Joseph being put in this situation where, first of all, he's there for no good reason. And now he's put over to have the charge over these ones who were there for a good reason. And he's working with these ones here to cause whatever it was that the keeper of the prison needed them to do to prosper. And so Joseph here, again, we see how the Lord is putting Joseph in these situations, and we realize, well, his ultimate plan is that he's going to make Joseph ruler over all of Egypt. And we see here that little by little, Joseph, when he was back home, he was over certain things that his father had put him over, and he was very faithful and responsible. He came to Egypt as a slave. He was faithful, and he was put over all the things of this individual man's household, Potiphar, and all those things prospered. And now he's in this prison where he's been put over these people that are certainly not generally cooperative and not going to do the things that need to be getting done, but yet he's blessed here to be able to cause these ones to do these things that are required. And the prison keeper sees that and has great favor toward him. Well, all of that, of course, is training Joseph to what he's ultimately going to be doing, which is seeing over the entire nation of Egypt, which includes not just the criminals, but all of these people all over the nation of Egypt. And so we see that part of what the Lord is doing here is training Joseph spiritually in heart, but he's also training him for the position that he's getting ready to give him in a few years. And so we see there in verse 5, we'll read, it says, "It came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house." I'm sorry, I'm lost my place. Verse 23 of chapter 39, it says, "The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper." So here, again, just very similar to Potiphar, the keeper of the prison trusted Potiphar so much that it says he didn't look to anything that was under his hand. Now that seems rather unusual, does it not? Here's a prison keeper who's been given charge to look over these criminals that are in the prison, but yet he's seen enough from Joseph to feel that he can just let him do this and not look to anything that had been put under his hand. And so again, it demonstrates the great faithfulness that Joseph had, even as he's here enduring this imprisonment and working with all of these prisoners. Now, we know, again, the story where ultimately Pharaoh's baker and butler were put into this prison there alongside of Joseph, where Joseph was. And in chapter 40, in verses 8 through 19, we see that Joseph is able to interpret these dreams that the butler and the baker has. And, of course, Joseph makes sure there in verse 8 of chapter 40, Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" And so he starts out, before he makes those interpretations, making it very clear that it is God that is providing these interpretations. It's not of Joseph's own power. And so he makes sure that as being a faithful steward of God, he's making sure that that credit is being given where it is due, which is God being the one who is interpreting these things. And so he goes on and interprets these dreams for the butler and the baker in verse 13. He says, "Within 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore thee unto thy place." And saying that to the butler. And then he turns and he asks in verse 14 of the butler. So of course, he fully believes the interpretation that the Lord has given here. And so he says, "Well, here is a man that is going to be back in the presence of Pharaoh in 3 days." And so Joseph uses this as an opportunity. In verse 14, he says, "Think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house." And so he requests the butler would cause Pharaoh to remember the good that Joseph had done and to get him out of that dungeon. As we would expect, those things were fulfilled. In verse 21, we see how Pharaoh restored the butler, his butlership again. The baker was hanged as Joseph had interpreted in the dream. But there in verse 23, big letdown, it says, "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him." So, here's Joseph. Think again, if you were in his situation, would you not begin to have a little hope here that, here's a way out. I can get this butler who's certainly going to be happy to have had this interpretation, and he should be able to tell Pharaoh, and I should be able to hopefully find a way out. But we see that he didn't remember him. And he forgot him. And we see that 2 years pass before he eventually does remember Joseph. And so we see that in chapter 41, it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed a dream, and behold, he stood by the river. And it goes on and gives us a description of this dream that Pharaoh had. And so in verse 8, Pharaoh had this dream. It says, "Came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told him his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh." Well, that's then what finally caused the butler to remember here. And in verse 9, it says, "Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day." He describes what had happened there in the prison and how Joseph had been able to interpret his dreams. And so we see then that causes Pharaoh to send for Joseph in verse 14. It says, "Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh." So finally after 2 years. But think about, again, that hope that Joseph would have had, that he would have been able to get out at that point. And then a whole other 2 years passes before this finally does occur, what he was hoping that would pass come to pass immediately. So here is Joseph for two more full years, continuing to be in prison, continuing to work with these prisoners, and continuing to have these things prosper and have that favor that he had there with the keeper of the prison. And again, all of that is part of that training that the Lord was putting Joseph through to get him to that ultimate plan that he had for Joseph, which was to be over all of Egypt. And so in verse 25, we see where Joseph is now beginning to explain to Pharaoh about that dream that Pharaoh had. And he says, God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. So here the Lord is getting ready to bring some things to pass in Egypt that is going to cause, ultimately cause, all of the Israelites to come down into Egypt. And again, the Lord had said they're going to come into this land that's not theirs. They're going to be evil and treated for 400 years. And so you have to ask, well, how is the Lord going to get all of the Egyptians into this land that's not theirs? Well, this is what he's doing. He's getting ready to cause this famine everywhere that is going to cause Joseph's family ultimately to come to Egypt. And so here Joseph is explaining that, well, the Lord is getting ready to do something. He's showing you what he's getting ready to do. And he talks about these seven good years and these seven years of famine. There's going to be 7 years of great plenty, as he says there in verse 29. But in verse 30, after that, he said, there shall arise after them 7 years of famine. So Joseph is making it very clear to Pharaoh there's going to be seven good years ahead, but then after that are 7 years of famine. And so in verse 33, it says, now therefore let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Well, Pharaoh realizes, well, it's Joseph that's communicated all of these things. He looks like he would be a good candidate. And so in verse 39, Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And then further down in verse 46, it says, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went throughout all the land of Egypt. So here 13 years had passed from the time that Joseph had been sold by his brothers, thrown in the pit, and then sold to the Midianites and carried down to Egypt. 13 years serving as a slave under Potiphar and being in the prison over the ones there in the prison. But he's gone from that now to being literally over everything in Egypt. And as Pharaoh said, only in the throne will I be greater than you. So really, he was giving Pharaoh complete charge over the land of Egypt. He was still had that authority over him, but really it was Joseph that was making all of the calls in terms of what the Egyptians needed to do in those coming years. And so we see how the Lord took Joseph then from being in that very terrible situation when he was 17 to now being the ruler over one of the greatest nations on the earth at this time. In just that, I mean, if you think about it in the history of things, 13 years doesn't seem like much. And so in that 13-year span, he took him from being a 17-year-old you know, a teenager, to being the ruler over, you know, one of the great nations of the earth. Now, from Joseph's perspective, what had he gone through in those 13 years? And certainly it was a tremendous amount that he had gone through during that time. But he understood throughout all of that time that the Lord was working with him. We're about to run out of time here, but if we look in chapter 45, when eventually in those years of famine, his family comes to Egypt, his brothers, he reveals himself to his brothers. In Genesis chapter 45 and verse 4, Joseph said unto his brethren, "Come near to me, I pray you." And they came near, and he said, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt." You have to imagine the shocked look on their face when he said that. And so in verse 5, though, he makes this very important point. He says, "Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life." And so, again, throughout all of this, Joseph was fully faithful in believing that God was going to carry out this plan, and he understood that all of these things had happened because God was, as he said, sending him before his brothers to preserve their lives. And so, and he repeats that in verse 7, where he says, "God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." And verse 8, he says, "So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt." And so he points out here that it wasn't them that, as he says, it wasn't them that sent him to Egypt. It was God. And so Joseph is giving all this credit for being thrown in the pit, being sold as a slave, all of these things. He says that wasn't you, this was God. So he understands that this was all part of God's work. And so it's an encouragement for us to realize that sometimes very difficult things do happen to us. I hope nothing as difficult as what Joseph endured. But these things do happen. And we should realize that we're not alone in these things. Joseph understood that, and he understood that the Lord was working a plan here. And when his brothers... eventually he met his brothers again. He wasn't vengeful. He wasn't evil toward them because of the things that they had done to him. He understood this was all part of God's work. And he repeats that three times here that God was the one that had sent him before them in order to deliver them. And so we all need to be encouraged that he's also working with us, just like he was with Joseph, and that God has a plan for us. And he's given us a promise, as we mentioned earlier in Romans 8:28, that he's working all of these things for good. And so even when we have difficult things like Joseph, we need to recognize that there's some good that the Lord is going to bring about because of this thing that doesn't seem so good right at the moment. And so hopefully we all can be encouraged to remember that example in Joseph. And when we're in those situations in the heat of the moment, that we remember to be faithful, that the Lord, knowing that he's working these things, and whatever we're presented with, that we're going to do whatever is required of us to be faithful in serving through that situation. Brother Glenn?
Joseph was going through a lot of things.
Well, I mean, certainly he was faithful in these things, and it, you know, it's sad to think about. Well, you know, those brothers lied, and he lived under that, you know, that lie for those years, thinking that it really also kind of demonstrates their hard hearts as well, right? That, I mean, certainly he was mourning and at the loss of his son, and here those brothers were that had been a part of that. You would think that they would eventually say something, but there's no indication. Yep. So we certainly he was showing his faithfulness as well. Any other comments or questions? All right. Let's see here. Brother Peter has our closing prayer tonight, and let's see. It looks like Samuel stepped out. So, well, Michael, could you do our other Samuel? Can you do our pick a song, Samuel? I'm trying to hide. We do have several that we need to remember on our sick list tonight. As I mentioned, Brother John's home with a migraine tonight. Brother Ted called earlier and said that Francis is not feeling well, so let's pray for Francis that she'll be feeling better shortly, and they'll hopefully be back on Sunday. It's good to see Megan and family made it back safely from their travels. That's very good. Let's continue to pray for Sister Doris. She was not with us on Sunday, but let's pray for her to gain good strength and be able to be back with us. Peter, are there some, there's some not feeling well at your household, is that right? Okay, so Sharonda's sick, so let's pray for Sharonda. Also, the Johnsons made it in on Monday afternoon, and I believe they're going to be coming in probably later tomorrow afternoon here. So hopefully we'll see them on Sunday. The Watsons are also planning to come in. I think they should be here on early Saturday, so let's pray for their safe travels, and they plan to be here for about a week, so hopefully we'll see them Sunday, and this coming Sunday and Wednesday. Are there any other announcements that we need to make? I'm sure I'm overlooking something. Let's continue to pray for Brother Gabriel. He's continued to recover little by little from that bone infection. He still has a walker that he's using, so let's pray for him. He's really Brother Johnson's right-hand man, so to speak. I mean, he's the main translator, but he's also the main, a lot of other things too. So let's pray for Gabriel that he'll have good strength, because he's a big part of that work over there. Anything else? All right. Samuel, do you have a song, a number? Number 623. If there's anyone here tonight who is subject to the Lord's invitation to put on Christ in baptism, or if you have a need for the prayers of the congregation, we would ask that you would come forward as we stand together and sing tonight.